values, and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
I want to invite you to join us in community service projects. We started Broomhead's Action Alliance so that we could help out in our community, make it a better place, give you an opportunity to volunteer side by side with us. All you're doing is signing up to be on the list to be notified when we're doing projects. You choose the one you want to join us on. Just text ACTION to 411-923. That's ACTION to 411-923. We'll even send you a free t-shirt while supplies last. Carrie Lake, candidate for governor. It was called yesterday after the bigger drop that happened. There was it was anticipated that it might be on Wednesday, but the drop came on Thursday night about 7 o'clock or so. The lead for Carrie Lake increased, and so Karen Taylor Robeson conceded the race and threw her support behind the Republican candidates, and so now it begins. Now the campaign for Carrie Lake goes. We know that Katie Hobbs, we already knew that Katie Hobbs was the candidate for the Democrats, and how will this play out? You could not have two more different candidates on the ballot. They are polar opposites politically, and how will this play out? And so I talked with Carrie Lake today, and by the way, we will be inviting Katie Hobbs on as well, and all the candidates on both sides of the aisle to help you be informed voters. And I just love the fact that here at KTAR, we have KTAR.com/Arizona Votes. We had all those interviews with primary candidates there, and we are going to be now filling that in with the general election candidates as well. So please use it as a resource. And Carrie Lake joined me this morning at 8:35, and we talked about the issues that people cared about. But one of the things you haven't heard her talk about was I asked her about the priorities. I asked her about specifically the number one is the economy, and she talked about all of her policies kind of being intertwined. So when I asked her specifically about the economy, this was a pretty broad answer, but I thought it was interesting.
Well, I mean, all of my policies are kind of intertwined. When we secure our border and when we don't have hundreds of thousands people pouring across, taking jobs, really, that Arizonans could have, that helps Arizona. And so we're going to secure the border, and that keeps a lot more money for us not having to fight the crime and the drugs and all of that. And then we're going to try to lower taxes, and we're going to try to help them with sales tax, help them dropping property taxes. We've got a tax policy that we think will really make life easier for Arizonans so that they can flourish, whether they own a business or they're in the workforce. We have a ton of jobs that we need to fill in Arizona. We need to get our kids ready for those jobs so that they can successfully take those high-paying jobs. And they're not jobs that require a college degree. We want our kids trained to take jobs where they can actually make good money. I think I talked about that welding program they have down at the Vail School District. These kids are getting out of high school, and they're getting offered jobs for $70,000 to $100,000.
And that's one of the things I enjoyed, that we expanded a little bit more on education. Education is going to be a big issue in this next session of the legislature because of that spending. And there's going to be a huge issue, and it's going to happen every single year unless they get it overturned. And we have no idea what the legislature is going to look like. That will be the next phase as we talk about elections moving forward. What does the makeup of the state legislature look like? Do Republicans pick up seats and expand their majority in both the House and the Senate? Does one or both of the chambers flip to being Democrat controlled? All of that is going to play a role in what direction Arizona takes next. I will say, when it comes to education in Arizona, the expansion of opportunities for children, and I think parents look at this as well, but they don't look at the opportunities. And I think things have shifted. College education was a guarantee of a good, high-paying job, and for the most part, the rest of your life, that you would be gainfully employed, be able to raise your family, and the sky was the limit. And I don't believe that that's the case anymore. I still believe there is a lot of value in a college education, especially in the high-tech fields. If you're going to go and be a nurse, if you're going to go through those programs where there is a huge demand, but just having any college degree, having a business degree, or having something else is not necessarily going to guarantee you anything. And there has always been a large segment of our youth that is, even maybe if they go to school later when they get older, they are not going to go into the college setting right after high school. They are looking to enter the workforce. The expansion of CTEDs, or career technical education districts, that we have WestMech in the West Valley, you've got EVIT in the East Valley, and they are preparing young people. They have adult education programs as well for adults who didn't get the education they wanted in high school, didn't go to college, but they want to trained for a specific industry, culinary arts, whatever it is, and they're available at these CTEDs for adults. But for high school students, and a couple of these programs are amazing to me. Imagine being a 16-year-old that decides, you know what, I want to be in the medical field. I want to take the EMT program. And imagine going through the EMT program at an EVIT or a Westmec, if they have it there at Westmec. I know they have it at EVIT. And at the end of your high school years, when you turn 18 years old and you walk the stage and you get your high school diploma, you go right out and take your EMT exam and you're working on an ambulance or in an emergency room and in a clinic or a clinic. Imagine the advantage, all of us knowing this now at the age we are, had we had that skill set and drive at 18. And the other part of an education in this direction, and it doesn't necessarily pertain to the campaigns, but the other way that this pertains to education is direction. I never imagined that I would have a job that I would ever use algebra again. I knew I was working at the time I was working in restaurants. I made a lot of money. I thought so as a 16-year-old. It was a lot of money for a 16-year-old. But I never imagined that I would ever use algebra again in my life. But I'm glad I had the skill set, because everything you do as an electrician is an algebraic equation. Wire sizing, conduit sizing, everything you do is an algebraic equation. Fortunately, I had a skill set, but I would have been a much more motivated student had I known and had a direction. So for the students that are going to these CTEDs that say, I'm probably not going to go on to college, at least not right away, but I want to have a good job. I want to have a skill. Imagine those students that are in the electrical, in the electrician program at a CTED, realizing and having their instructors, who are business owners in the industry as well as teachers, say to them, you're going to use algebra for the rest of your life. You're going to use geometry for the rest of your life. If you don't know it, you're never going to excel at this trade. This is how you apply an algebraic equation to what you're doing in your career field. There is an advantage to being motivated because of a direction you're going. I think we've all been there, that when you have a goal in mind, the things you need to attain that goal become easier and they make more sense. So I think all of this ties together. These races of superintendent of public schools are going to be a major race, because in Arizona, education is changing dramatically. We have the expansion of the ESA program. If the public schools want to hang on to students and not have those students take those tax dollars and go to private schools, charter schools, home schools, micro schools, whatever, they're going to have to do a better job of equipping these children. And if they don't, they are going to lose a lot of money in the public school system, because parents, now that they have options, will take their children elsewhere. Not to mention predicting about $1.5 billion that won't be able to be spent unless you get 2/3 majority of the legislature to come together and get rid of a piece of, or at least suspend again, to allow the overspending in public schools. That's where we're at. This election cycle is the most interesting I've seen, especially for a midterm, in a very, very long time. Every day at 11:20 on the show, we do something called Did You Hear This? It's our way to catch you up on the biggest headlines of the day if you've been working and haven't had a chance to hear them. So we'll do that coming up here in just one moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, we do it every day at 11:20, time for the Friday edition of Catching You Up. Did you hear this?
Did you hear this? Broomhead's reaction to the hottest news stories.
More races have been called in the Arizona primary. Carrie Lake and Adrian Fontes have secured their spots on the November ballot. Carrie Lake had this to say about bringing the GOP together to take the win.
I think I say, hey, do you love Arizona? We're all big boys and big girls, and we need to step forward and say that was a dust up and a grueling fight, and now we come together.
Do you think it'll be a fight for her to get Republicans and independents behind her?
It may be for some independents. I don't know that yet. We'll see how the messaging works out. If she messages the way she did on the show this morning, I think she's going to do an excellent job, and she's going to get a lot of people on board, because the broad ideas that she was speaking about this morning are the things that people are concerned about. As far as the hurt feelings and gathering support behind them, Republicans have been a little, and it's not the candidates themselves, voters have been a little less likely to forgive and forget sometimes. But I think what in the importance of this election, when we start hearing, I'm speaking from a Republican point of view, when people start hearing what the other side wants to do, I think more and more of them will throw their support behind Republican candidates as a whole.
Former CBO Director Doug Holtzeken, speaking with you earlier, made a good point about spending on top of the Inflation Reduction Act.
So there's $1 trillion in new spending outside of this that's going to generate a lot of inflation pressure. So if you want to see the inflation impacts of Congress, watch everything it does. And what it does is spend now, promise to pay later, and cause inflation.
Vote is expected tomorrow on the so-called inflation package. Are you excited about the trillions more in debt?
I just think that what's going to happen with this is it is not going to do anything that it said it's going to do. We are going to continue down the class warfare line here. But let's be honest, what they are bragging about in this bill is they are bragging about two things: taxes on the rich and climate change. Those are the two issues that they are bragging about, and I don't think it's going to resonate, because if the American people are not feeling relief, they don't care what your politics is going to be. They vote with their wallets, and I think they're going to vote accordingly. You are listening to Did You Hear This? We do it every day at this time to catch you up on the headlines.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott has some words for cities that are whining about social services being overwhelmed by buses of migrants that he's sending their way.
Up in arms about a few thousand people coming into their communities over the past few months. In any one sector in the state of Texas, we have more than 5,000 people come across that sector every single day. And I started busing people to Washington, D.C. when local officials could not handle the number of people that had come across our border.
Well, we know Governor Abbott's probably not, but are you feeling bad for the mayors?
No, actually, what I think is if they really want to get something done, is, as the mayor of New York said, that he believes that we should come together and work together on this. I'm in total agreement on that. If you don't like what you are seeing on the streets of New York right now, then you have better get together with Arizona and Texas governors and ask them what you can do to convince this administration to stem the tide of people coming across the border illegally. What's happening right now is not working for anyone but the cartels. They are the only ones that are benefiting. And whatever that change needs to happen, it is going to be Democrat mayors in D.C. and New York and across the country that affect the change. It's not going to be Republican governors. And it's got to, they have to help.
Yesterday, you spoke about the Project Veritas leak, about the FBI flagging pictures of historical flags as militia extremism. And later that afternoon, Senator Ted Cruz questioned FBI Director Wray in a hearing.
Director Wray, what are y'all doing? This makes no sense. Do you agree with this FBI guidance that the Betsy Ross flag and the Gadsden flag and the Gonzales battle flag are signs of militia violent extremism?
All three of those flags are probably my favorite. Do you have a favorite historical flag that might get you flagged?
No, I mean, all these flags. And when you look at the Betsy Ross flag and you look at the history of our flag and how it was made and you look at early American history, I think maybe that's my favorite. The Gadsden flag has such a historic value as well. But to label it as extremism, or at least the symbols have been overtaken by extremists, is an unfair thing to do, unless you're going to look at the other side and what was considered extremism, Black Lives Matter and the protests in the streets and violence that happened that was connected to that issue. Unless you're going to do that, which I think is wrong, by the way, but if you're going to do it to one side, you have to do it to both when you're in law enforcement, because you are supposed to say and only not go against things you disagree with. That's where the politically correct problem lies in this country. And, you know, we would, unless we begin to acknowledge that there is extremist behavior and rhetoric on both sides of the political aisle and say it's not acceptable on our side. You see, again, I don't like what's happening with these January 6th hearings because I think it's overtly political. But on January 7th, and on January 6th, but on January 7th and the days that followed, I talked about how disturbed I was, how sick to my stomach I was to see people on my side of the political aisle behaving the way some of those people behaved. The problem is that in the court of political or public opinion, anybody now that wears a MAGA hat is connected to January 6th. And that's as unfair as saying anyone that has a Black Lives Matter t-shirt is connected to the violence we saw in towns when violence happened at some of those protests. And what happened on January 6th was a despicable act. Those people need to be punished and we need to move on. But connecting everyone on the right side of the political aisle, especially if they support Donald Trump, that connecting them to violence and extremism is as unfair a thing to do. But when federal law enforcement does it, it becomes scary because now it's not rhetoric anymore. Now it's law enforcement. And I just think it was a good thing for the Cruz to point out. Coming up in a moment, we're going to talk a little bit more about the spending bill. And you're going to hear a little bit more from a former Congressional Budget Office director and what he believes is going to happen with all of this. We'll talk about it next.
Values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. Let's talk about the spending bill that is looks like it's going to pass. They have a vote scheduled for it this weekend. Senator Kyrsten Sinema, with a few changes being made to it, says that she is on board with it. We talked with Douglas Holtz-Eakin. He is the former president or head of the Congressional Budget Office, among other things, working in nonpartisan ways just strictly on what will happen when a piece of legislation, is it going to do what it says it's going to do? That's kind of what they do at the CBO. And I had him to talk about this bill, what's going to happen. And just let's start with what he said. What will this Inflation Reduction Act actually do when it comes to inflation?
This Inflation Reduction Act won't reduce inflation. It won't do much. It's pretty inconsequential, to be honest. The greater irony is that while everyone's been focused on it, Congress has passed a veteran spending bill that could cost up to $600 billion, and it's about to pass a CHIPS plus science bill that will cost about $300 billion, all deficit financed. So there's $1 trillion in new spending outside of this that's going to generate a lot of inflation pressure. So if you want to see the inflation impacts of Congress, watch everything it does. And what it does is spend now, promise to pay later, and cause inflation.
So let's talk about a couple of other things that are happening, because this is where the American people stand largely. I'm partisan in my politics. I'm politically inclined. I talk about politics fairly often in my private life. I got involved in a political way, but my mind is still on issues. But I do pick political sides on things. Most of America doesn't. The people that listen to talk radio do. You agree with me politically or you don't. And some people are here just for the issues. And in the end, the vast majority of the American people just want to be able to live their lives. So there are a few headlines that I think that are important. U.S. manufacturing in July declined slowly as business deal with excessive inventory is one of them. And the reason why that's important is we are beginning to see a slowdown in the manufacturing sector. We had somebody on from the National Association of Manufacturers yesterday talking about that happening. We know that a couple of other headlines are the position the American people are in. Now, the good news is they blew through the jobs creation that they thought was going to happen in the month of July. There was a huge increase in jobs creations, although we are seeing a slowdown in other sectors. But there is some good news. People are still working. But prices are going up so much, people can't keep up. We are seeing flat wages or reduction in wages while inflation continues to grow. Here's a couple of examples. By the way, a big shout out to our friend here, Kristen Bentz, the retail analyst, KB Advisory Group. She just happened to send me these two stories right before we were talking about this. If it sounds familiar, it's because she said it on this show. Seltzer sales go soft as low-priced beer goes up. The example she used on the show was that people are getting away from White Claw and the seltzers that are more expensive, and they're buying Natural Light and they're buying cheaper beer. She also used the example of McDonald's just skyrocketing in their sales because people are buying value meals at McDonald's, where you're seeing others not meet their goals because people are shifting how they spend their money. They are forced to buy cheaper. Walmart sales, really good. When you look at high-end items, really good. Who's getting squeezed? Everybody in the middle. The middle class always takes the hit. Lower income people get subsidies. Higher income people can survive. Middle income people living on a shoestring budget, making ends meet with families, trying to put some money away for retirement or maybe their kids' college, saving money to buy a house. You make too much money to qualify for subsidies, but you don't make enough money when these prices go crazy. It doesn't hurt you. That's who's getting squeezed. That's just one headline. Here's another one. GoFundMe fundraisers for groceries, baby formula, and gas are soaring. This is from a publication is a national, it's a website, and it's called Retail Brew. And this also from Kristen Bentz. A grandmother in Arizona asked for donations for groceries for six beautiful munchkins, her grandchildren, because her daughter and son-in-law struggle to pay grocery bills. Someone in New York City needs donations, too, for a baby formula bank to help parents in desperate need due to this insane shortage. And another Good Egg in North Carolina is looking for donations to buy pet food for nearby animal shelters. These fundraisers for groceries have risen 30%. There's a list of a description of appeal for groceries or related, like grocery shopping. Fundraisers for baby formula have risen 700%. Gasoline fundraisers, 150%. Animal shelters and humane society, 25%. That is the position more and more Americans find themselves in. There is absolutely, in America right now, good things in the job world. People are working. But does it matter how much you get paid if you can't pay your bills? If somebody said to you, and I'll give you an example, whatever money you make now where you pay your bills and you're living fairly comfortably, let's say you have an okay life. You don't worry about paying your bills every month. You can set some money aside, go on vacation once a year, and you're in an okay position. You take that income, the same exact income, and you move to San Francisco or you move to Southern California. And all of a sudden, the money you're making isn't even close to what you need. You are almost living at a poverty level in a place like that, because the cost of living there is so much higher. So your boss says, I'm going to give you a 20% raise to move to San Francisco. But your living expenses go up 35% by going to San Francisco. And then your boss says, what are you complaining about? You're making more money. And you say, but it's costing me even more than that. That's what the working people in America are finding. So this Inflation Reduction Act, by what the experts are saying, is not going to do much about inflation. What it's going to do is it is going to hammer the energy sector. It's going to raise taxes on corporations because, you know, they're all evil. And it is also going to make big strides in their climate agenda. Other than that, it's not going to help the American people. That's where this is going to be a big problem. What's funny about this is Doug Holtz-Eakin actually said that there are some things in the prescription drug thing that are good, that there are some things that should be there. Capping what somebody on Medicare or Medicaid pays per year for prescription drugs, that you're going to be capped out at $2,000 for the year. And he said, but that also is a bit in Republican bills and Democrat bills, and that's something that should be there. So we take care of the older people among us who have got a lot of medications that shouldn't see their retirement eaten up by their medical costs. So a lot of that there is good stuff, according to him. But when you start factoring in the other ways they're hammering the industry, it's going to decimate the industry. And a lot of drugs probably won't be available. I had somebody actually tell me, well, that's a lie because look at Canada. And I said, I really didn't think about it in the conversation because I was on Facebook while I'm on the air. How many thousands of people, how many out there listening to me are Canadians? How many thousands of Canadians come to the U.S. for medical care because they can't get it in Canada? Because the wait time is so extremely long. So if we're going to talk about socialized medicine and how little it costs, let's talk about how effective it is too. You don't like socialized medicine. Look what happened to the VA and the scandals there. That's socialized medicine. That's single-payer, government-run healthcare. That's what you are going to get. I have one more segment of the show for my week. I want to talk about a topic that connects all of these dots together. We're going to connect them all before we leave. We'll do that coming up in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. Appreciate you spending some time with me. Help me make a difference in the community. We started something called Broomheads Action Alliance. We'd love your support and help. If you'd like to join us in community service projects, just text the word ACTION to 411-923. We'll let you know when they are happening, and you can sign up and join us. That's ACTION to 411-923. So let's kind of put a bow around all of this. I think we can connect immigration, we can connect the workforce and education with all of this right now. I think most of us would understand as we get older the mistakes we made when we were younger. Had we not made them, we may be better off. We try to teach our kids to not make the same mistakes we did. We try to be a better example. All of that's true. The semiconductor industry is calling for immigration law changes, and here's why. I'm going to nutshell this for you. They are saying that we need to extend the visas, and we need to make sure people that are here, that are engineers, that have their master's degree or their PhDs in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, the STEM programs, that there aren't enough people in America that are qualified to do these jobs, which is why we are importing them from all over the world. And if we want the semiconductor industry to flourish in the U.S., which we are putting a lot of money behind to do that, there is a huge chip plant that's being built in the Northwest Valley, just the I-17 up near Carefree Highway. If we want that industry to flourish in America, we are going to A, focus on teaching children the STEM programs, and we are going to have to keep foreign labor here that are experts because we don't have enough Americans to do the job. And I think that's an indictment of the education system in America. I think that we are not doing a good enough job to qualify enough people to do this. I got a message from a father that said, my son just graduated. What do you mean I'm not? I said, you have. I'm saying we don't have enough people like you and your son. And there's no way around that. We laugh sometimes at the lack of education from our children, any kind of depth of education with civics in our government. We are falling way behind the technological curve. So we've got to find a way to fix that. The head of the American Federation of Teachers says that conservatives are undermining teachers. That's not true. I think that the education system, as it works with the AFT and the NEA, the National Educators Association, American Federation of Teachers, AEA, AEU, have politicized education to the point and have industrialized it to the point where it's big money for those organizations. But they can't produce results. So they want the money, they want the respect, and all of us respect the jobs that teachers do, but they don't get the results, and then they blame other people for the lack of the results. That's how it is. The Phoenix Police Department doesn't have enough police officers. The agency is much younger than it should be because there was such a gap in the time of hiring. Many of the older, experienced officers who got 20, 25, 30 years on the job are leaving the profession because it's time for them to retire. Some are just tired of it, which means we are getting a lot of experience off the streets of Phoenix, and they are dramatically understaffed. Is anybody saying that there's an excuse for the rise in crime, or we still expect officers to behave with the utmost of integrity, the utmost integrity? They are still to conduct themselves like professional police officers within the confines of the law and the policies of that agency. They are to prevent crime, and they are to make sure that they are stopping criminal actions. If you call 911, you want an officer to show up or officers to show up at your location. And we don't allow them to make excuses, and they don't. Here we are. We got a teacher shortage. Teachers don't make enough money, and we're still making excuses for the education system. That's why parents are looking for other options. As long as we continue to politicize education, this is what happens. This is what happens. So when I would say to you, with all due respect, that if you want to look at what's happening, why parents are doing what they're doing, it's because the organizations, the teacher organizations, don't listen to parents. The National Association of School Boards deemed parents at school board meetings domestic terrorists. They said it in a letter to the White House, domestic terrorists. But now you've got the head of the teachers union saying that it's the other way around, that teachers are being undermined by the parents and not the other way around. Not all teachers. Again, I am a huge supporter of educators. I hate the politics of education. And I will never stop talking about this topic. Never. It's way too important. Way too important. Social media users for the weekend, if you want to stay in touch, at Broomhead, KTAR is my Twitter account. Would love to hear from you during the weekend. At at Broomhead Show, updates you on upcoming things on the show. Mike Broomhead, all one word on Instagram. There's a fake account out there, by the way. Make sure it's me. And I'd love to hear from you, and I'd love to keep in touch. We'll be back Monday morning at about 8 a.m. Until then, have a great weekend, everyone. God bless.